It's the My Michelle Live podcast.
My Michelle Live, entertainment review. Roll out the red carpet. Here's Michelle.
Hey, welcome. I am Michelle Mendoza, and My Michelle Live is a podcast that helps you to look a little bit deeper as you see all the news stories, the issues. I don't care if it's sports, news of the day, or in our case today, entertainment. There's a God story out there. If you find it, can it enrich your life? I say, yeah. So hang out with us today as we talk about movies, television shows. I'm even going to introduce you to the most notorious character in all of human history. The reprisal of Jesus Christ Superstar is touring the nation, and we will talk with the actor who plays Judas. So a lot coming up on our entertainment review on My Michelle Live. But who's this cool guy sitting next to me? Well, this is the one and only Adam Holtz, getting us plugged into the movies.
I'm pretty cool. Plugging you into the movies, this is Adam Holtz.
He's as cool as iced tea on a hot summer's day. It is Adam Holtz.
Hey, Michelle.
I love iced sweet tea. I grew up on sweet tea.
That's yeah, right. I like my sweets and I like my tea, but I don't mix them. So well, there you go.
See, he's a true northerner there. It's all right. It's all right.
My family's
from the South. Sweet tea. It was in my baby bottle. I'm not lying. You know. So there, that might explain a lot. I don't know. But we are in a full-on autumn mode for television, movies, and entertainment. Yep. There is no end of things to watch. Most of the television shows that a lot of folks had been indulging in, they took their little break, and now they're back with a brand new season. Everybody seems to be having cyber attacks. Every single television show is having cyber attacks. Are they trying to tell us something?
Probably. I mean, I just got my debit card replaced for like the fourth time. So apparently they have my number too. And I'd like to get it back, but it lives in the internet somewhere. So just gonna have to deal, I guess.
There it is. And in movies, I'm going to say it's kind of slim pickings, but rest assured, there's plenty of concerts. There are plenty of plays. Things are opening up. And oh my gosh, is this a sports season? On Sunday, Adam, my teams that I follow from my city had a woman's professional soccer game, men's MLS game. We had a hockey match. We had a football game. I mean, it was just never. Oh, and a baseball tournament, a baseball game as well. So there's no end of ways to entertain ourselves. But why does it seem that movies are so, right now?
Well, it's a slow time of the year, traditionally. I mean, August and September are back to school time, and even into October, the studios are not rolling out their huge, humongous blockbusters. Although James Bond is coming back next week, so
didn't you say that there's rumors that he's going to be dying, like for real? Because if we look at some of the trends in entertainment, it's probably about time that 007 gets replaced with someone of color.
Well, I think that happens in this movie. Like, James Bond is James Bond, but he's no longer Agent 007 in the movie. It's an African-American woman.
See?
Whose name
boom.
Not
called
trying to pull out of my memory banks, but that has already happened in this movie, and there is at least some discussion about whether that's going to be the status quo moving forward. I'm not sure if they have answered that question or not. But you're right on time with that observation.
Well, it's just we have a reprisal on television of The Wonder Years. And of course, it's followed that trend that white is so yesterday. POCs are the new coolness. So Wonder Years is redone, and it's done with a Black family.
Yeah, and you know, it's a pretty good show. I think there are great themes here. I think that if you enjoyed the first one, you'll enjoy the fact that we have a similar kind of setup here of, you know, a story that's primarily being told through the eyes of a young adolescent. And, you know, they call them the Wonder Years. I think that my coworker and peer Paul Acey said, you know, most of the best stories are things that happen to you before you're 13, which I both agree with and am horrified by it by the same.
It's all downhill from here.
A lot not good happened to me before I was 13 as well.
Okay.
But it's got some great messages about family. So I think, yeah, there is this thing happening with, you know, reimagining almost everything with different gender and or different, you know, ethnicity. But that being said, this is a pretty good show, and it's set in the 1960s. So it's going to have a different flavor than the original did.
And interesting as it is set in the 1960s, what are we going to see 1960s values, 1960s ideas, or as we often do, are we going to portray what we think today and what is politically correct today onto another era where those ideas were not prevalent? I think that's really part of the problem with entertainment right now, is that I don't have a problem with reimagining or telling a story with a different ethnicity, with a different sex. I don't have a problem with that. I think it brings a little more understanding into something that may not be like you, right? That's fine. Right. That's fine. I just don't understand why we do not have imagination. The Wonder Years may have been a wonderful series, but you can't come up with a new series. I think what all we're doing today, and I heard this on a TikTok video, I stopped and I went, whoa, dude, you're right. That the problem with entertainment today is that the people who are making decisions are standing on the shoulders of greats before them who were innovative, who came up with innovative ideas and television shows and movies. And all they're doing now is reimagining and putting into it. The only thing they have to offer is their political point of view. While some of those things might be interesting, they may be important, where are the innovators of today coming up with new content to tell their story?
I have so many thoughts on that. We could go for an hour on that question alone. That's an excellent question. I have two thoughts. I think that there is a kind of cultural rot that is happening that comes from when everybody just goes off and does whatever they think is right, as we've talked about before, that allusion to, you know, the passage from Judges, the center doesn't hold, right? Things start to just fray and fall apart. And we've also seen in our culture a rejection largely in the mainstream culture of God. And so the transcendent ideas that could perhaps undergird a bigger story, and even if it isn't a Christian story, just even a transcendent story, I think those are fewer and further between. And then I think there's another factor involved, Michelle. Even though we sometimes accuse Hollywood or the industry of being incredible and, you know, just incredibly out there in terms of its political and social messages, and in many ways that's true, Hollywood is fundamentally fiscally conservative. They are risk averse, and so when something works, they will package it five different slightly new ways until it quits working, and then they'll let it die for a while. I mean, how many Friday the 13th movies did we have in the 80s? And then it went away for 30 years.
But thank God it's back.
Another one coming out, you know? And Jamie Paris looks like she's 400 years old, which actually is kind of cool. I saw the trailer. I'm like, man, I would not mess with her. She will kill you.
Come on. Anyway. It's kind of like Linda Evans with the Terminator movies. Yeah, come on. Yeah. That part,
but
bring
Hollywood
it, I like
is,
it.
Hollywood is not a risk-taking entity, if I can characterize it that way. They will fundamentally try to minimize risk however they can. There's another R-rated movie out this weekend called The Saints of Newark, which is a prequel to the Sopranos series. Okay. It's young Tony Soprano. Now, I don't know about you, but I wasn't laying awake at night thinking, man, I wonder what Tony Soprano's youth was like. But here it is, right? I mean, it's another example. We have Family 2 coming out this weekend, which is, you know, based on a property that's what? Almost 60 years old at this point? 55? It was mid-60s, early 70s. Proving your point. And it has some nice messages about family. It has a bunch of crass humor. But is there anything truly artistically compelling? With all due respect to the artists and the illustrators who worked on it, I'm sure hundreds of hours or thousands of hours. I don't really, and I'm, see, now I'm on a rant. I told you I could go for a while. I can't get really excited about an Addams Family movie at all. And my name's Adam, so go figure.
And about the Addams Family movie, same stuff, different hijinks. People. I don't know.
Yeah.
Is that what we're looking at, basically?
Yeah. I mean, you've got Morticia and Gomez are worried that their kids are on screens too much, which good job for worrying about that. They go on a road trip and
they're not worried, though, that in the trailer she builds a sandcastle that looks like a guillotine and acts like she's cutting off her brother's head. They're not worried about that, though. That's cool.
Well, it is the Addams Family, you know, the whole thing.
Not to say that, you know, I might not have contrived something like that when I was that age. So,
no,
move along.
I wasn't doing that with my brother.
Nothing to see
either,
here.
But I, you know, there's some nice messages. There's a question about whether Wednesday, the daughter, is actually a biological member of the family or whether there was a baby swap accidentally at the hospital at birth.
Okay.
And so she crusade to find her real biological parents. I'm not going to tell you what happens, but I will say it has a nice message about the significance of family and the importance of family. So there's some nice stuff here. I don't want to sound like a curmudgeon, but I'm riffing off your point that there's not very much that's original. And even James Bond, what is it, the 28th or 29th James Bond movie? I mean, coming out next week?
Yeah.
But it's a lot, you know?
So we have some things that are out there right now that I think really need a little bit of talking about. One that I cannot really even imagine me wanting to either pay to go see this or even watch it for free if it were on television, or even necessarily have someone say, hey, I'll give you $100 to watch The Eyes of Tammy Faye. But there it is anyway. And you were saying it's actually not a bad film.
It's not a bad film. And obviously, if you're below probably the age of 45 or so, if you say Tammy Faye, you might just think it's a random Southern name. I mean, it kind of feels Southern in that sense. But those of us who grew up in the 80s remember Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. Jim Baker was probably the most influential televangelist and ultimately became the most infamous televangelist because there were improprieties and illegalities all over the place. And ultimately, he and his wife both ended up in prison. And Tammy Faye was known for her incredibly lavish makeup, right? And I actually saw an article about Jessica Chastain today. She said she thinks playing Tammy Faye permanently damaged her face because of the amount of makeup that she had to wear.
Oof.
And all that under first world problems, and we'll keep moving. But what this does is it shows Tammy Faye's journey of faith and journey through life And there was a real purity and innocence to her faith, even as things around her got really sordid. And ultimately, she wasn't a saint in terms of how we use that word colloquially. She's culpable for some of the bad stuff she did too. But we see someone whose faith really kind of perseveres. And as she tries to offer grace to people and figure out what it means for herself as well. Now, this is not a movie that does Christianity any favors, as you might have guessed. I mean, you're not going to see a sympathetic portrayal of very many other Christians in this movie. But I think it's not a hit.
This is where I am just fine getting controversial. You know what? I don't care. Bring it. I think that kind of opulence and weepy, streamy makeup is, it's not the reach out and share the love of God story that I see in the Bible. Now, can God use that kind of stuff? God uses just about anything. You know, God can use anything God wants to use. Not just about, he can use anything he wants to use. But when you have that kind of give me money and Jesus will heal you and opulence and the impropriety, you just see the fruit. Bring it out, show sunlight on it. Jesus isn't tainted, only stupid people who do stupid things. There I go. I said it.
Well, as I often tell my children, usually when we're driving, there's a lot of kinds of stupid in the world, and there's some right there. So there you go. I'm with you. But the movie, I think, I will say it's not perhaps what people would expect it to be, in that it's a pretty... it's a pretty nuanced look at a character in American history, recent American evangelical history, that there might be more going on there than we would have given her credit for if all we ever saw was Tammy Faye weeping on TV, which frankly, I don't think anybody shed any tears for them when they went to prison. You know, it was like, oh, good, you got what was coming to you.
Maybe not.
That's a fairly cheerless attitude too.
And don't you think that maybe, to be fair, people do things with good intentions, but if there isn't real grounding in a real God, it goes real wrong real fast. And that's
what we see with her story. We see that Jim Baker, I think Paul Acey in his review of the movie said, you know, it wasn't clear what Jim loved more, Jesus or money, but both of those were there from the start. Or maybe it's even a line in the movie. I can't remember 100%, but Tammy had a purity about her and, you know, ended up with this guy and this thing happened. So even in stories where we think we know everything that's going on, there may be a layer of humanity and grace under all the makeup that would still surprise us.
And I would like to see that. Plus, there's too often in religious and Christian circles where we don't want to show the bad. We want to show up. This is a thing. People show up at church on Sunday. Well, how are you doing?
Right.
Oh, it's wonderful. You're having problems with your husband. You're on the verge of a divorce. One of your kids just ran away. Finances are tight. But we don't want to give God bad PR. You know, it's time, I think... this movie might be very timely in an era where it's time to get real people.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And again, there's a lot of content here. This is not going to be a movie for everybody, but
I still wouldn't I still wouldn't be paid to see it, but I think it's a movie for this time. I have yet to change my mind on that. I'm still not interested, you know, but I like the telling the truth aspect. You can look into my life and go, wow, you suck. Yep, I do. But you know what? God is good. Nonetheless, boom, end of story. Another God story is God's Not Dead, We the People. A movie that might be inspiring. It might be like a call to action for a big segment of the evangelical population, but it isn't without some problems that I'm not afraid to take on.
Yeah. Have you seen it yet, Michelle?
I have.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about it. The God's Not Dead franchise, and this is the fourth one in the franchise, all of these movies have dealt with the subject of religious freedom mm-hmm. and our relationship with the government or secular authorities. The first one was more about an atheist college professor, but the last three have all dealt with government at some level. And this time around, the short version is David A.R. White, who has become the star. He's the guy who's been in all of them. He plays a pastor named Reverend Dave, and he has a church. And in his church, there is a homeschooling co-op. And Francesca Battistelli, the Christian artist, plays a mom who kind of runs it. A social worker shows up, says, yeah, no, this isn't even close to what the state requires you to do. And they're basically told, you either need to change your curriculum to get with the program or send your kids to school within 10 days, or we're going to fine you $1,000 a day, maybe hold you in contempt of court if you don't do that and take your kids away from you. And about that time, Pastor Dave has a friend of his who happens to be a congressman in Washington, D.C. call and says, hey, we're talking about these issues in a bill that's coming up. Can you come testify? And so the bulk of the drama in the movie is about that testimony in Washington, D.C. And here's, I'm going to give it props and then I'm going to raise a question or two and we can talk about that. I think the question of what is our responsibility as Christians in a representative democracy, how are we supposed to relate to the government? That's a super important question. And I don't think there's one answer to that. And I think that this movie asks that question, and it does it in a way that is so melodramatic. And at times it paints the other side, if I can call them that, so one-dimensionally as these, you know, kind of villains that I think it does a disservice to the complexity of the question. Boom.
I just have one little Bible verse to pull out that might encapsulate how I felt about that aspect of the movie. Our fight is not against flesh and blood.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's against powers, principalities, rulers of darkness in high places, the Bible says. It's not against the guy sitting next to you or across the table or even those people that you just roll your eyes at that are sitting in the halls of Congress or in the White House. That's not who our fight's against. Can we remind ourselves of that as we're on social yes. media? Can we remind ourselves of that as we are tearing people down through our keyboard warrior antics? Our fight is not against flesh and blood. Where have we come to a place where our faith is so intertwined with government? And I'm not saying this is not a government of, by, and for we the people. It absolutely yep. is. But I'm a citizen, I would say, a citizen of heaven first. And that citizenry absolutely. Requires me to act a little bit better, to make a few yeah. better decisions. And I want to use this analogy. We have standards in America, and American standards have been a long-standing good thing. Do we always keep them? No. But when you go to other countries where lying is a virtue and laughing at people who are disabled is a thing, you are instantly appalled because that goes against our values. Well, if you have a higher calling, or if you're called to something better, like saying, I'm a citizen of heaven, you know, I'm a child of the Most High God, you have a higher standard that you should be adhering to. And that does not include always villainizing people instead of walking in love. Off my soapbox. There you go. Take
no,
it over.
That, and I want to just build on that. I think what this movie potentially does inadvertently, and if we were having a conversation with the people who created it, they might say, no, that's not what we were trying to do. But I think there is kind of a culture war element to this that turns it into us versus them. And we're so polarized already. I think our opportunity as Christians is, how can I step out of this bipolar narrative of, you know, it's us or them, you're either with us or you're against us, you're good or you're evil. And I mean, we have two political parties where people on one side think the other side is evil. You know, how often is Hitler invoked these days in both directions, right? And so I think I'm disappointed that even as the movie asks some important questions, I don't know that it does us any favors in thinking deeply about that.
Yeah. Two things on that. One, yes, ad Hitlerism is an issue. And while I have no problem saying, you know, history repeats itself, learn from it, people. On the other hand, demonizing people and build bridges, show people. I mean, that's what Jesus did. So right. The other issue that I have before I give a little praise to the movie is that we will see in Christian fiction films, everything is just too black and white, too neatly right. tied up with a bow, too perfect. And I think it's a deeper story. I think there's a God story in that. That just shows us we can't be God. God can right. Utilize things that we don't see. There's not always the ending that we expect, and we don't know sometimes for years why things had to turn out that way. Why is there,
and we
there
may
this
never
kind
know.
Of injustice? May never know, you know, until we're standing before God and saying, what the heck?
Yeah. No, and I think, and I'll get on a little soapbox. I think sometimes as Christians, we're not very comfortable with that mystery, you know, especially if the mystery involves tragedy or suffering or difficulty. We can think that we can confuse Jesus with a genie, right? That if we just rub the magic lamp, it's all going to work out okay. And don't get me wrong, I have received amazing blessings from Jesus and I'm deeply thankful, but I have also watched people go through suffering that doesn't make much sense. And even my attempts to try to spiritualize a meaning feels kind of offensive. You know, it's like, it is what it is. There's suffering here that I don't understand. And sometimes the best thing we can do with somebody in that place is just sit with them in silence. You know,
thank Job's you. Friends. Instead of having to have the answers or trying to, again, to be God's PR person. Look, we're a fallen world. We've yeah. chosen sin and we do it every single day. There's consequences to that. The world can suck at times, but yeah. God can use every single one of those things. All those things can work together for good in our lives in ways we never even realized. And beyond that, through it all, we actually can find a kind of a peace and a hope. Does it mean your heart won't break? Absolutely not. Does it mean you won't feel the pain of loss? No, but it means that somewhere inside there really is this crazy peace that surpasses understanding, where you're going, dude, either God is real and he's holding me through this time, or I freaking lost my mind. Either way, I'm feeling pretty good.
Right? There you go.
It's true. It's true.
I have nothing to add to that.
All right. So let me get to my praise is that I like seeing fairly well-acted faith films. I like to see people that some of the bravery of challenging injustice.
Yes.
There is a place for people to stand up. And we have been, in some ways, we've seen many people sit back and be a silent minority and lose their voice. You don't have to agree with it, but there's a place in society for saying, you know, everyone should have a voice. No more shutting things down. So there's my praise for the next in the long line, again, of God's Not Dead movies. And we're kind of running out of time. Is there anything else that you think we need to be aware of maybe this weekend as we go into the entertainment part of our week?
it's been absolutely savaged in the mainstream press, and we don't need to spend a lot of time talking about it, but Dear Evan Hansen, the movie version, which is based on a Broadway play and musical, I kind of liked it. And I kind of liked it because it deals with the issues of suicide and mental health in a way that I liked the characters. And yes, the guy who plays a high schooler, Ben Platt, is now 27. Yes, he looks like he's 27. Just, I had to make a choice to let it go and not just get hung up on that. And I liked, you can read our full review and get a sense of what it's about, but it's a, I think it's a great conversation starter. And I use that phrase a lot, but I think conversation is important. Unlike 13
that's what
Reasons,
stories do.
Supposed to be about suicide prevention, but ended up glorifying it. There's nothing in Dear Evan Hansen that glorifies suicide. We see it for the tragedy it is, and we're invited to think about maybe the younger people in our lives that might quietly and silently be wrestling with mental illness. And I appreciated that part of the movie,
okay,
even though mainstream critics have pretty much tossed it under the bus.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate that at PluggedIn.com, you can get reviews and more information on sexual content, drug uses, spiritual content, what parents and, well, anyone wanting to watch or indulge in any kind of entertainment might be able to expect. So you can see these long reviews if you go to PluggedIn.com for movies, television shows, social media sites like YouTube channels. You can look at books and video games, music. It's all there. So I want to thank you, Adam. We will catch you next week. What do we have on the horizon?
Well, we have James Bond, No Time to Die, and I joked with Paul Acey, who saw the movie this week. He texted me, he's like, this thing's 2 hours and 45 minutes, and I said, well, it sounds like there's plenty of time to die if you're going up against James.
Ooh,
so, and I do want to make one more shameless plug, I'll let you know why I'm making it. We have a podcast called The Plugged In Show. And this week we talked about God's Not Dead on it, but I also had a chance to interview Francesca Battistelli. So if you are interested in the movie, if you're a fan of Francesca, make time to maybe listen to that podcast too, because she was delightful. And I love her character in the movie too.
Well, stay with us. Coming up, we'll have some entertainment news and we'll talk with the most infamous man. Okay, well, the most delightful man who plays the most infamous man in all of human history, James T. Justice, who will be playing Judas Iscariot, lead character in Jesus Christ Superstar. So, hey, Adam, thanks for being with us.
You bet, Michelle. We'll talk to you next week.
Stay with me. Judas Iscariot from Jesus Christ Superstar will be joining me for part two of Entertainment Review, My Michelle Live.